That's Making History tomorrow afternoon at 3.
Now we begin a week of stories that are an eclectic selection from writers brand new to radio. The first takes us all the way down to the South Pole, where a solitary woman plans to lose herself among the infinite whiteness. Lisa Ross reads The White Road by Tanya Hirschman.
Today is one of them really and truly cold days. You're probably thinking cold is cold is cold. Either everything's frosty or you're sipping margaritas by the pool in Florida. But let me tell you, there are degrees of freezing. New York got pretty cold in the wintertime, especially for a southern gal. But all the way down here by the pole, Antarctic minus 40 ain't the same as Antarctic minus 25. You need damn hot coffee in both, that's true. You got me there. But there's a different smell to the air, believe me. When I open up for business in the morning of a minus 40, I stand on the doorstep and sniff, with Fluff beside me. I say, "Fluff, it's a damn cold one today." And she barks, clever damn dog. Then I turn the sign from closed to open and set the water boiling for the first lot, who won't be too far down the white road. That's what we call it, because that's what it is, all white. Some days you gotta wear them special glasses that they gave out on the induction day before I came down. Two pairs, in case one got broke. They said, "Don't look at that snow when it's sunshining, or we'll be putting the patch over your eyes, and that'll be enough seeing for you." Some things the eye shouldn't see. No, some things are just too much for it, if you know what I mean. Last Wednesday was one of them sunny days they were talking about. It was a real busy morning. I saw the first ants coming down the road around 7 a.m. That's what I call them, ants, 'cause that's what they are at first. I'm looking out through my big glass windows, the ones with the special coating on so they never freeze or get misty with all the heat from the guys inside. It's like you're watching a big white TV screen. It's all nothing, nothing, nothing. And then, sudden-like, little dots appear. The ants. They get bigger and bigger, and soon you see them, heading straight for me and my coffee machine. Big red trucks, with all their fancy equipment they carry to the research guys at the pole, a couple of miles past us. It's probably Phil and Eric, I was thinking. And yep, they pulled up and stomped in through the snow, stamping their big feet all over the floor, rubbing their hands. "What's up, Megs?" shouts one of them, Eric or Phil. Never could quite tell the difference. "Cold, boys?" I ask, same as I always do on a Wednesday when they make their run. "Freeze you as soon as look at you," says the other one, getting stuck trying to pull his snow jacket over his big head. "Coffee?" I say. "You're the best, Megs," they say together. And while they're arranging themselves in a booth, I start the pouring and bring over the cups and a couple of menus. When I first started, half a year ago, it was quiet. Everybody was just wanting to speed down that white road and get to where it was they were going. But then, slowly, they take notice of me and Fluff and our little sign for last stop coffee, and they start slowing down and making my acquaintance. They find us pretty friendly. The coffee's hot and not too bad, and I make the best damn scrambled in about 1,000 white miles. I add things to my menu now and again, depending on the supplies I get through once a month when Les brings me a truckload. Sometimes it's fruit he brings me. He got hold of a box of mangoes once, and you should have heard how everyone was over my mango and sweet potato pie. They just loved it. Sometimes it's nothing more exciting than a whole truckload of tuna, and I get to see all the different dishes I can make out of that. I can get pretty inventive with what Les hauls down here. I always was good in the kitchen. My kids'll tell you that, if you can find them. The one who's gone, he loved my scrambled the most. Ate it before it touched the plate, I used to say. Back to last Wednesday. What'll it be? I'm asking Phil and Eric. They and ah, and stare at the menus like they ain't never seen them before. Like this ain't the only place for hundreds of miles, and they haven't been coming here and eating my food once a week for I don't know how long. I love doing this, chatting and feeding the hungry. In between one lot and another, Fluff and I'll sit down for a breather. Me with my 33rd coffee of the day, most probably. And we'll stare out into the white. You could get lost in all that white. I never knew an outside could look so clean. I thought before I got here that I would miss the colors. The greens and the blues. The yellows and the browns. Not red. I would never miss red. But I don't miss a thing. In the evenings, we'll watch the TV. We get so many stations on that satellite, my fingers hurt from all that channel spinning. Fluff'll bark if I do it too much. Gives her a headache. She barks, and I stop right there on that channel, and we watch some soap opera with guys with square chins and names like Ridge, or a bit of the news from the real world, all them disasters and stuff. Then we hit the hay, early to most folks, but we gotta get up when the sun does. I don't mind it. I always was an early bird. Don't want to waste your life, I told my young'uns, but they didn't listen. Never do. Then, before you know it, it's too late. Phil, or maybe it's Eric, asks for waffles and maple syrup, and the other one wants toast and jam, and they both drink the coffee like it's coming off the trees tomorrow, and that's the end of it. So I go back into the kitchen and set about it. I stand in front of the toaster, and I close my eyes. I reach with my left hand and feel about on the countertop until I find the bread bag, and I grab it and take out two slices with my right. I put the bag down, trying to picture in my head where it is, and I feel over to the toaster. Toast goes in first time. It's because I've been practicing. Every day now, for about 2 months, I've been practicing with my eyes closed, a little every day. Now I can do it. I know where everything is. I can work all my gadgets and stuff. It was hard at first. I dropped things. I cheated and opened my eyes to clean up eggs and stuff that slid through my fingers. I put the grill on the wrong settings, nearly burned us down, or left things so raw they could walk. But now I got it down. I can do it. I take Phil and Eric their food, and while they dig in, I sit in the next booth and we chat for a bit. We got 2 tons of gloves today, they say. I don't know what they do down there, all those rubber gloves. Boxes and boxes of them. Some cutting up of stuff, I bet. What else you got? I ask, sipping my coffee. The week's newspapers, like always, they say. Bit old now, but they get so excited when we come in. Doc Baxter, he does all the crosswords. Those guys, they're real smart. They're doing important work, I say. They're checking out the ozone layer and stuff like that, making sure we humans ain't destroying it all too fast. Gotta have someone in these out-of-the-way places, learning about what's going on, increasing the world's know-how, don't you? They nod at me, grin, stuff food in their mouths. Few minutes later, they're pulling their layers back on, paying the check and out the door. The rest of Wednesday morning, people are streaming in. Different delivery guys, like always. Some regulars, some new and in need of serious coffee. And a special lot, a big group of young scientists on their way for a visit. One of them looked so much like... I have to stop myself going over and saying, "Hey." That's when I know it's a sign. It has to be the day. I knew the afternoon was going to be quiet. Anyone who comes down here comes through real early, in case the weather starts with its howling and rough stuff. The sun was out. It's one of them days they told me about. Dazzling, spreading light all over the white. It's time, I say to Fluff. She's real quiet, smart dog. I put on my glasses, snap on her lead, open the door, and we step out. It still amazes me, like it did the first time. I don't think a body would ever get used to it. the soft, clean cotton wool of it all, stretching on and on and on. The road ain't cutting through it. It's part of it, just flattened out a bit. A different white, a little dirty from the cars, but not so that it gets in the way of the beautifulness of it all. I cried the first day I got here. It was like I thought peace would be. Fluffy stood by me, her head resting next to my knee. I move a few steps towards the sun, making sure I know where the door is that I just came out of. "It's okay," I say to her. "We can do this, you and me. It'll still be me, you know that." I bend down, take hold of her leash, and straighten up. Then I take off my glasses. At first I see everything so sharp, and the white looks like gold. My eyes see little bits of gold shining all over the ground, and then it starts moving, like fishes swimming in and out of my head. Then the blurring begins. I feel dizzy. There is this pain behind my eyes, but I keep on staring. I am not going to shut them until it's done. It's over. I don't know how long I stand there. Slowly, slowly, someone is dropping a cloth over me, and this mist comes down in front of my eyes. Then it's all over. It's all just white. That was Wednesday, and I have to tell you, I'm pretty used to it already. That sure happened quick. I had thought, when I first got the idea, after watching a program on the television, 3 months after I had found Josh and everything, that it would be a big shock to the system. Not seeing sounded so different, like another world. But 5 days of whiteness, and it already feels comfortable, like home. Sure, I move around a little slow, with Fluff always there, making sure I know she's with me by giving little barks and rubbing up against me. She's a better person than some humans, that dog. Some humans don't deserve to live as much as this dog. She leads me around, pushes me in the right direction, makes sure nothing burns. At first, everyone was real shocked. I couldn't see their faces, but I could hear it clear as day. But, you know, they didn't ask too many questions, and I didn't offer any answers anyway. I think most of them knew my story about the blood, the bits blown open, the staring, dead eyes, the things that I saw, things no one in this life should see. I think they heard, the way people hear everything, nothing spreading faster than a sad tale, nothing worse than a mother losing a child. Down here, everybody's got a story. Everyone's got their reasons for being so far from the world. Mine's just one more to add to the pot. Les says there's some young girl wants to come help out for a few months. Sounds good to me. She'll be mighty welcome when she gets here. But even with just me doing the serving, they keep on coming, and I keep on scrambling and dishing out the coffee. I still sit and watch for them, only now I don't see the ants. I hear them. It's not so different, really. It's just very white. And that's the way I like it.
Lisa Ross was reading The White Road by Tanya Hirschman. Time Being is a Sweet Talk production.